One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
An Erios original.
I guess I'll get a bi pride flag. I don't really like the bi pride flag, but I am bi proud.
Oh my God, there's so many goddamn flags. Who can keep track? I like them all, but you need a decoder ring to figure out exactly who's coming down the street at your average pride parade.
Hi, this is Margaret Cho. You're listening to The Margaret Cho. Today, we have a very special Pride episode with the incredible Dan Savage. He is, he's amazing, and I'm so excited to talk to him on this very special Pride episode. If I could write a musical, I would do that. You would have to be able to write an opera, because that's what a musical is. It's a libretto. It's actually one very long song, because you have to keep referring to it.
Sometimes I refer to musicals as tolerable operas.
Yes.
I find opera itself to be intolerable.
Opera itself can be really intolerable. It can be really annoying, although there's a couple of songs in operas that I do really enjoy. But in general, the whole of opera as a format is really boring.
I gave opera a chance. I'm not one of those people who went to one or listened to something and never. I was with a guy. We were partners for 5 years, who had been a professional boy soprano, and he dragged me to a million operas. So I gave it a fair shot. But like the last couple of times he dragged me to the opera, I waited in the lobby for hours for the torture to end.
It would be a lot to just sit there. I mean, it depends, I guess, on what it is. I do like a spectacle, and I do like a show that has a lot of costumes and large voices. But I do think that it does drag. You know, it is not, but
yes.
I do love drag, but I don't like a show that drags.
Yes, I completely agree. It does. It's like, you know, it's a person saying something usually very simple at great length.
Yes.
I can't do operas. My husband likes to go to the opera. He goes to the opera.
Oh, good.
But, the secret to our success as a couple is that I don't have to do the things that he likes to do if I don't also like to do them, and vice versa.
That's perfect.
And that extends to people as well as operas.
It's perfect.
And it works for us, yeah.
That works. I mean, that really, really works. But I do like when a drag queen drags. I like when a drag queen takes a long time to get to the point.
You know, I have a confession to make about drag,
yes.
And this makes me a terrible human being.
What is that?
I was a drag queen for like 10 years. I did drag, and I was going through old boxes in my house. I said, I still have a bunch of my drag.
Wow.
And I watched RuPaul for the first like 4 seasons, and I was in love with it. But then I feel like I just kind of, I was done. Like, okay. I've seen everything because people are endlessly creative and there's like new and more creative queens all the time. But I just like reached my limit for consuming drag or appreciating drag as someone who does it or as an audience member. And it's, you know, I guess after I'm 55 and I've been sort of out and gay for 40 years.
Yeah.
You know, and I started seeing drag shows for the first time when I was 16 years old.
Ooh.
And I just like, I'm kind of done. I don't need to watch drag anymore. Not that there's anything wrong with drag or people who still like drag or people who do drag. And I was a drag queen. I always have to qualify this because people really get their backs up. You know, you don't watch Rue and you don't like drag. It's not like I don't like drag. I like drag. I did drag. I'm just done with drag.
Yeah. You know, it is what it is. And I think that there's many phases of it, you know, and it is a very large art form. So it's like music.
I know. There's so many. I'm like a drag kinds. Philistine. Maybe it'll I'll catch a new groove, you know, when drag morphs again into something, you know, it's endlessly creative and it's always sort of digesting and regurgitating the culture. It felt more transgressive once upon a time than it does now. And maybe it's the transgressiveness of it. Like, it used to be this line that if you crossed, like, people wouldn't date you if you did drag. And there's still some people who won't date you, but it's not toxic the way it used to be. People loved you when you were in drag in a bar because you kind of were this priestess. You'd stepped out of the competition of desire in a gay bar.
Because
when you went in drag, it was like, you're the center of attention, but no one's sexual attentions are going to be directed your way.
That's right.
And it was sort of like, for at least for the time you were in drag, it was like a vow of celibacy.
Yeah.
And so you could interact with people and they would be at ease with you because they knew you weren't trying to get in their pants. That's why you were in drag. If you're trying to get into someone's pants, you wouldn't be out in drag.
Right.
And, you know, that hyper-competitive masculine world of the gay bar, like, drag was really powerful for that reason. And I found it like very comforting because I've never been really comfortable with that kind of, you know, male gaze competitiveness. I just don't have that in me either. And so I really loved doing drag, but it had social consequences, and the barrier to entry now is lower. And I think because of that, it's attracted a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't do drag or just doing it for attention.
I'm
being the old fart who used to do drag, pissing on the people who's doing drag now. So
no, because it's become a different thing because the entry point is different. You know, the reasons for doing it have shifted, and I think that people get in it for different reasons, and that it used to be that you got into drag because either nobody looked at you at all, or you didn't know how to talk to people in any other way. Or you were afraid in general, or there was something that sort of pulled you out.
Or it spoke to your soul and you had to do it.
Yeah, there was nothing
else. The barrier
to
entry was really high. Like, if you were out in drag, you had to do drag.
Yeah.
This was who you were.
Right.
And you had to do it. And now it's like, you know, you see people out in drag. A little bit, it's like modern dance or, you know, abstract painting. Like, anybody can say they do it. Or being a writer, anyone can say they do it. And so it attracts a lot of people who could probably make better use of their time elsewhere.
Yeah.
But I'm a vicious
person. No, but it's interesting because you see now an entire generation who have grown up with RuPaul's Drag Race. So then you see people who have been raised on watching it sort of in a very aspirational way. And then they grew up wanting to be like these queens that they've seen. And so they kind of reference them sort of all throughout the show as they progress. And it's really a strange thing. And then all of these sort of like Instagram sort of fan accounts, and then the self-referencing, and it's its own universe. You know?
Yeah, maybe I just lost the thread. Maybe this is just me trying to reverse engineer an excuse for not getting it because I stopped paying attention. You know, my husband and I like retreated for a while and had a kid, and like maybe I just lost the thread and I don't get the references, and it's not a problem with drag or the barrier to entries or more people doing it. It's just a problem with me being an old faggot fart.
No. It's just a different it's just a different thing. And then we're like, wow, you know, how much has been, like when you come back to gayness, when you like kind of, not that when you step away, because I don't think you ever step away from gayness, but when you go and like retreat into other areas of gayness, then you come back and you're like, wow, people have been real gay while I was gone. And you're like, woo, how gay we get. Like, you know,
oh my God, yeah. It's crazy. And you know where else you see that? With sex. Like, yeah. People were super, like, when I was out and for many years, like, double penetration was just not a thing that the average person aspired to use your word that you applied to drag. Like, now it's, like, practically comes standard.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
and I don't mean I don't mean spit roasting double penetration. I mean two dicks, one hole.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's impressive. I mean, all of it, like, I mean, the double penetration, which sex in general, I think what's really impressive is bottoming in like the newest forms of it, or just, I mean, bottoming in general. Like, we thought bottoming was one thing, but I couldn't imagine the kind of bottoming that, you know, people get into now. It's great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, I'm really inspired, and I'm really, yeah, amazed.
Like, we all thought we were varsity level bottoms once upon a time. It turns out we were the JV. We just never seen the varsity squad take the field.
Yeah.
You know, like my friend Devin Franco is the most amazing bottom on the planet.
Yes.
And like, I, you know, watch his video clips. I follow him on Twitter, and I'm just constantly impressed and astounded.
Yes. Yes.
By what he's able to do. It's like watching Nadia Comaneci at the 1976 Olympics.
Like, I want to get on the piano now and play Nadia's theme. It's really, I mean, it is impressive. And, but yeah, like old girl, all old guard gayness, it's really, but I think of you as new guard gayness always. And I think, like, when I think of you, like, I really think about, like, you should get, I was trying to look at the definition of who gets the Nobel Peace Prize, and I really do think you should get the Nobel Peace Prize for It Gets Better. Because if it's like a peace prize, then it's like you should get like a peace prize. Well, I mean, it is really peaceful.
I don't think we'll get a peace prize. And of course, the project, we had the impact that it did, not because Terry and I made, you know, those hundreds of thousands of videos, but because other people were so moved as to make the videos and tell their stories. Mm-hmm. But we did get an Emmy for it.
Yes.
So I think we were prized out. I think we got, a chunk of gold on the mantle. And I think that's enough.
But as a life-saving measure, because I mean, also like in terms of lives saved, like it is on the level of, think of, you know, the heroic life-saving thing, because I think of, as a young gay myself, like suicide was such a viable option. You know, when you're young and you're gay and you're confused and you're sad, you could easily kill yourself. So many of us have.
Yeah, and I think that's what the people sharing their stories at the project did, is it gave people a vision for their own future that in some ways they could imagine. You know, they knew that, you know, people don't, unless they're raised on Mormon compounds in Utah with no access to the internet or any other media, they don't grow up now thinking, I'm the only one in the world, I've never heard of anyone like me, right, who feels the way I do. But, you know, people who are in terrible circumstances and who sometimes have no way out for right now can think that no one who's out there who's happy and queer and loved could have come from where I'm coming from, or have, you know, endured what I'm enduring and made it. And what was so moving about so many of the videos is people were able to watch stories being told by people whose parents had the same reaction that their parents were having, who were rejected or brutalized in the same way that they are being rejected or brutalized right now. And, you know, in some of the most powerful videos, you have parents sitting next to their adult queer kids apologizing to them for how they treated them. And that gave a lot of people in tough circumstances a hopeful image for the future where, you know, their family could come around, which maybe they didn't picture being possible, but they saw other people talking about their families having come around. And that was powerful. I'm constantly getting emails from people who say that the project helped them, saved their lives, changed them. And I always accept their gratitude on behalf of everyone
who
made a video and participated in the project.
It's wonderful. And I think it really kind of gave the first ideas of parenting to gay people. Like, it gave us this queerness, like this idea of like, oh, well, you know what? Let's just grow up for a second. Like, you can try to be adults, you know, like, let's say parent, because I think that like our generation too lost so many elders during AIDS that we forgot that we actually need to be grown-ups. Like, I think we got stuck in this like perennial like childhood because we lost so many like of the people who were supposed to be old.
Yeah, and adolescence was all we were allowed, or all the culture was comfortable allowing us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember when I came out to my parents 8 billion years ago, their complaint was, you know, gay people don't get married and have children. And I remember looking at my mother and saying, and whose fault is that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we didn't make up that rule. You did.
Yeah.
And fuck you for throwing that in my face. Like, it's like gay people invented our own oppression so that we could escape into, you know, a life of never-ending pleasure and adolescence and indulgence. Like, not that there's anything wrong with a life like that, and straight people are free to choose to live that life. It's just they had more options, and that's all we ever wanted was more options. I'm not prescriptive about parenting or settling down. In some ways, neither Terry nor I have settled down despite settling down.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, you know, you get to assemble your own poo-poo platter.
Yeah. I mean, settling down is definitely, you get to describe or you get to prescribe it, you know, according to your own definition. Like, we can settle down in any way we want to. And settling down is sort of like, it's a myth of like this idea. It's more just like grow into whatever life you want, but it's more
right. And having more options. And that's one of the things that's really interesting about right now is like so much of what we described as the gay lifestyle, there's nothing gay about it. It was just all we were allowed.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we were allowed more, some people who are gay, like don't want to have kids, don't want to get married, prefer to have, you know, serial monogamy, successful short-term relationships, multiple relationships, that kind of, you know, web of lovers and social contacts that was for some of us what we wanted, for others of us what we were only allowed to have.
Mm.
And what you've seen now is like more gay people living what was the straight lifestyle, proving it wasn't straight necessarily, but also more straight people living a gay lifestyle, which proved that it wasn't gay necessarily.
Right.
My older brother Billy jokes that in a lot of ways he's gayer than I am.
Mm.
He doesn't have kids.
Mm-hmm.
He's not monogamous. He's got a long-term partner, but they don't live in the same place. They have their separate apartments. And, you know, he likes to joke that he's, of the two of us, if you just looked on paper and stripped out the genders of everyone involved and tried to guess who the gay brother was, you would guess him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think then that's very like modern. You know, it's like we don't need to define. That's the most modern thing we can be, is when we don't have to define. And that's the best. Yes, she is.
Speaking of kids.
This is the gayest. I'm really like the most Palm Springs gay. Although I don't live in Palm Springs. I do. I'm wearing a caftan over a bathing suit. And I have a tiny chihuahua.
You got to have some bangly bracelets. Although that's bad for recording an interview.
I know. I had to take them off to record. And as with the rings, many rings that I have to take off to record. But it is very, very gay, yes.
We're tempted to move to Palm Springs sometimes. Although, to me, it seems like maybe the wrong moment to move to Palm Springs because of climate change. It feels like, you know, move to Palm Springs now, enjoy it for a couple of years, and then die in the desert.
I know, but it's all of our friends are out there. It's all the people that you want to see anyway. So it's all
know,
of the mid-century furniture and all of the people that, you know, you always want to see anyway, and they're all in one place. So that's
right.
That's the bonus. That's the bonus and the great part. Now, how is your quarantine going so far?
Pretty good. You know, we can't complain, but somehow we manage.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still employed. And, you know, I think of so many people out there right now who've lost their jobs, who can't pay their rent, who are in just the direst of circumstances. And we have, you know, a big house, and there are three of us, so we have a little society, and, you know, we're not wanting for anything, and still the pressure is getting to us. Mm-hmm. And so I can't imagine what people who are in much dire circumstances must be feeling and going through right now. And my heart just aches for everybody.
I know it's hard.
Who's suffering.
It's hard. It's like a very strange, and I mean, I really am aching for trying to figure out how to celebrate gay pride. Now, this is always a very important time, and one of the reasons why I wanted to speak to you and different people to celebrate our month. It's our 1 month of the year that we can do our June, which will, this episode will go out on. And, you know, it's like I never want to forget where we come from, and I never, you know, even though we still have come a long way.
We have come a long way. We have come a long way, and there's nothing about acknowledging that that takes anything away from, you know, the awareness that we still have a ways to go and more progress to make. I like to say that there's this right-wing myth that we can't risk any progress because society will collapse. It's what they said about allowing women to vote, allowing gay people to serve in the military, about ending segregation and Jim Crow, that, you know, it would be so destabilizing, we can't risk this. And then every time we make progress on, you know, extending the right to vote to women, allowing gay people to serve in the military, society doesn't collapse. And we should point to all the times they're wrong. When they claim society will collapse if we move in forward in this way. But the left-wing myth is that there's been no progress. The left-wing myth is we're as racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, anti-Semitic a country as we have ever been. And things are worse now than they have ever been. And it actually undermines a really powerful argument for progress on the left if we can't acknowledge the progress that we have made already. Because they're always wrong. They always predict doom and collapse. They're always wrong. If we can't, don't want to or acknowledge or highlight where we've made progress, and they, and then be able to point to all your predictions of doom and gloom were wrong, so you were wrong last time, you're wrong this time, it hampers, it cuts our own Achilles tendons when we're trying to run forward. And it's really dumb. You know, the folks who said if we allow gay people to serve in the military claimed that if, you know, you ended Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the bans, that 500,000 active troops would leave the military. Two did, and they were both chaplains, so not exactly mission critical, can be spared. And we should constantly point to things like that. Yet, on the left, we sometimes feel we can't because the left-wing myth is there's been no progress. And that is as dangerous in some ways a myth as the right-wing myth that we can never risk any progress or society will collapse.
That's right.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
So how do we celebrate? I mean, we celebrate, I'm going to get some gay pride masks and I'm going to take some pictures outside the front of my house in some, some gay pride flag wrapped up in some gay pride flags. I might get a leather flag too. I definitely fly both flags. I guess I'll get a bi pride flag. I don't really like the bi pride flag, but I am bi proud.
Oh my God. There's so many goddamn flags. Who
I know.
Can keep track?
I like the bear flag as well.
I like the bear flag, the bear flag, the leather pride flag, the pride flag, the bi pride flag. I like the new riff on the pride flag with the brown, black, and tan stripes. I like them all, but you need a decoder ring to figure out exactly who's coming down the street at at your average pride parade. It's a little bit like the hanky code when it got a little ridiculous in the 70s.
I love the hanky code. There's also like the lesbian hanky code, which has sort of the all of the different ones. And I like when the hanky code would put it like lace or velvet to sort of denote like goth and like, you know, there was sort of like the 80s ones where if you like a goth or like a like a goth BDSM.
But it was impractical.
It was
like
a
the
lot.
Idea behind the hanky code was you would put this hanky in your back pocket and go into a dark gay bar and someone from the other side of the room would be able to tell the difference between light blue, blue, navy blue, robin's egg blue.
I love it.
And baby blue.
It's so cute.
And they all meant different things and nobody had pen lights. You couldn't really.
You didn't really know, but it was a really cute, like, it was a good, like, poster because you could decode them all. And then I used to work at Stormy Leather down in Soma in San Francisco. So people would ask, actually, what the code was. And at one point, I really did know all of them.
You know, the code only worked when it was simple. Red was fist fucking. Blue was ass fucking.
Yes.
Green was you could be hired. Black was S&M.
Yes.
Gray was bonded. Like there was, it meant like there were six or seven and they were bold colors and you could tell. But we're a classifying species and queer people seem to be especially love saying, you know, contradictory things like, you know, I reject labels, but labels are so important. We have a zillion of them.
So many.
And, you know, you get to a point where you tip into nobody can possibly keep track.
It's too many. It's too many. But it's a fun, I like the idea of being tagged in the wild. And then you can figure out, like, who's who. And I think it's really fun. It's really cute.
I do think it's fun. I'm just saying it's impractical.
It is. Like,
that there are 8,000 different pride flags and, you know, the demisexuals and different versions of demisexuals have their own different versions of pride flags. And it's just like, okay.
It's so cute.
But nobody's going to, who's going to know?
Nobody's going to know.
We have more flags than the UN. And I challenge you to identify the flags of all 50 states.
It's so,
like,
I know.
Nobody could do it.
It's so and, funny. Yeah, it's so funny. But I love it. Yeah. I love it. I love it. I love it. Now, where is sex going? Like, I get scared right now. Like, the people who are very active on all of the apps during the quarantine, because there's like time, I guess, for people to get down. But I'm like, but you can't. How do you do? How are you doing this during quarantine? How are you doing this? With your quarantine, getting it off.
We worry, you know, I'm more worried about the people who are going to church, which seems to be a very effective place to infect others and get infected.
That's way worse.
It's more fun to talk about the people who are being dirty on apps because it's always more fun to talk about that.
That's true. It's way worse than the people that are going to, like, protest. That's, like, so stupid.
Right. And going to church.
That's
at least the person
really
who's, you know, I've urged people to be responsible, you know, to not hook up right now, to have sex with the people that you're already having sex with, that you're sheltering with, and to have, like, tons of online sex and cyber sex and video conferencing sex to pass the time and make dates for the future. But at least somebody who's, you know, sneaking out to have sex and taking that risk, and it's unfortunately not like sneaking out or having sex in the middle of the AIDS epidemic like I did, where I was only putting myself at risk. If you sneak out to have sex with somebody, you're putting everyone else you come into contact with at risk, and your housemates and, you know, your parents, if you're sheltering with your parents. Like, you're taking on risk for others, and that's morally questionable. Mm-hmm. But at least that person who's sneaking out for sex is only seeing one person. The person who goes to church is seeing hundreds of people.
That's true. And that's a lot worse.
And if they're infected when they show up, potentially infecting not just the other people in church, but everybody that those people in church are going home to hang out with afterwards.
Yeah.
And it's...
That's a million times worse.
Yes.
That's so disgusting. Yeah, that's so disgusting. Yeah, what other options for sex? You can definitely do, like, a Zoom sex, like a Skype sex, like a cam sex, which I think is hot. That's fun. I do like a VR sex moment. I haven't done that, but I think that would be a good idea.
Do you know what I think is really hot? And, you know, I'm not so much into Zoom sex because I don't want to have to look at myself. But, like, getting on the phone with, you know, somebody that is a sex partner of yours and reminiscing, like, talking about the hot experiences you've already had together.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And making some plans and promises about hot experiences you're going to have in the future.
Oh, that's good.
I always think, but I have this weird hang up about masturbation. Not that don't masturbate or I'm against masturbation, but my weird hang up is masturbation should be about hope for the future. Mm-hmm. You know, I once got a question at Savage Love where somebody wanted to know how I felt about them they felt they were masturbating about a partner who had died recently. Mm. And felt a little squicky about it. And I was like, it is kind of squicky. It's like masturbating about Marilyn Monroe. Like, I don't get it. Like, you want to masturbate about somebody you could potentially hook up with. I think that there's just something, you know, about masturbation that should be forward-looking and anticipatory.
Right.
And so, you know, getting on the phone with somebody and talking about the stuff you've done and the stuff you're going to do.
Yeah.
To me, that's hot. That's something to jack off to.
Yeah, that's hopeful. That's definitely forward looking. And that's a good idea. That's good.
Right. And I think that can help get us through this time.
Yeah, that's optimistic.
Like, rather than masturbating about things that can't happen, masturbating
right.
about experiences you're not going to have this year because nobody can go to IML, nobody can go to Folsom or Pride, mm-hmm. masturbate about Folsom next year.
That's great.
Masturbate about
that's great.
IML next year.
That's great. I think that's a perfect thing to do. You know, because it's going to happen next year, and it's great. I mean, to look forward to that, and it's not going to be long. And I think, yeah, definitely. I've actually never been to IML, but I imagine it's a lot of fun. I have been to Folsom though, and I look forward to going next year. I'm going to go
as
next
do
year.
I.
Yeah, I definitely now, like, all the thing is like, I hadn't thought about it, but now it's like, oh, I really definitely want to go, because it's like, now I really want to partake in all of these events, because it, you know, you just don't know when you're going to have a chance to do it again. And now it's like, now I really appreciate all those things.
Right. You know, when there was a sense of, you know, IML comes once a year, but also Folsom and Dory.
Yes.
Folsom, Berlin,
yes.
Deadlines. It was possible to look at all these events and say, oh, there's so many, and I can get to one whenever I want. I can go to an event like this. And now that they've all been taken from us, I think that we value each of them more.
Yes.
And we will, like some people are saying, you know, this is going to change how people go out. This is going to change how people, you know, whether people want to go to big mass events. I actually think this deprivation is going to make people hungry for those events again.
Yeah, and value.
And like you said, yeah, value it, appreciate them more,
yes.
And take them less for granted. There's so much about our lives now
mm-hmm.
We realize that we had been taking for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we're going to make that mistake.
Yeah, I think you're right. Now, how would you suggest spicing things up with your regular like quarantine sex partners, you know, the people that you are sheltering in place with on a regular basis? Like, would you say, like, what do you think would be the best thing to make it more fun for yourselves? Do you think that there's a way?
You can order toys. You can fantasize with each other. I think dirty talk is, you know, for those of us who enjoy it, I think it's really great.
Yes.
And I do think people have to be easy on themselves, though, and patient with their partners. There's some research out of the Kinsey Institute showing that a greater number of people in reaction to the pandemic are finding their libidos tanking right now.
Mm.
You know, something like 40%+ people are reporting that their libidos are in the toilet, and 30% are saying that roughly are saying their libidos are actually higher now, that they're hornier now.
Yeah.
And the issue is there's a lot of people in the 40%+ who are partnered with people in the 30%+.
Mm.
And how do you make that work? Like,
Know,
you can't. I think that's where sort of compassion, assisted masturbation, patience all comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
We call it the masturbatory assist at our house, TMA. Also TMI, actually, when I'm talking about my sex life with Terry, but whatever. Where, you know, if one of us is horny and the other isn't, the other will help the other jack off.
Oh,
whatever
that's
that
nice.
Looks like, whatever that means.
Yeah.
The trick to the masturbatory assist, though, is if the person who's helping suddenly wants to upgrade to full sex, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's not okay for the person who's being helped to try to upgrade to full sex.
Oh, uh-huh.
Because then that makes the person who's there to help or there to assist feel like, you know, it disincentivizes actually helping if you're going to feel like, you know, pressured and then feel like you failed or disappointed your partner because you agreed to play with their tits or talk dirty to them or sit on their face or whatever while they jacked off. And then they suddenly wanted more. And you were like, no, this, I'm just here for the masturbatory assist.
Mm.
So it is this delicate balance where,
you
know, if the person with the lower libido is suddenly inspired and gets horny after they start to have, you know, start to help, then it's okay for that person to initiate the upgrade. Mm-hmm. But if the person who's being helped, they just have to like accept that they're being helped unless the other person upgrades.
Wow.
It's a little tricky to explain.
No, I get it.
I think that is something, you know, a lot of people are reluctant to help their partners masturbate mm-hmm. because they feel like either I'm going to have sex or not have sex.
Yeah.
And if you feel like you can just, you know, be the warm body next to them, hold them, talk about, you know, say some dirty things, play at their tits, whatever it is that gets them off, mm-hmm. Without feeling like you're going to be made self-conscious about the fact that you're not horny right now, you're going to connect more. And then sometimes you'll both catch it. You know, there's that paradox. It's often gendered. Like they talk about this being like men get horny and want to have sex. Women, many, often start to have sex and then get horny. Mm. So if you never, you know, entertain some sexual contact when you're not horny, you're going to miss out on a lot of sex you might want to have.
Right.
And it's difficult to talk about that because women are often in opposite sex relationships under such pressure to be sexual at times when they don't want to.
Yeah.
And they can feel coerced or threatened. So it's tricky to say to women, like, sometimes you should, like, kind of roll with it and then see. Mm-hmm. It's easier to say that to a woman whose male partner understands that sometimes she'll like want to be a little intimate but won't want to have sex, won't want to have intercourse. And if you're okay with that, maybe she might want to have intercourse if she's feeling like free and not pressured and respected and safe with you, because you're not gonna guilt trip her or whine.
Yeah.
Or worse, you'll have more sex than you do. Yeah. It's easier to navigate that stuff in same-sex relationships, I find.
Yeah, I guess it would be, because there's something about having that same gender that sort of, I don't know, it makes it sort of a more of a lateral kind of conversation where you're both sort of understand certain things. But yeah, I think that's real intimacy, though. You know, when you can really mm-hmm. like jump that divide and really talk. And that's what makes a relationship truly like intimate and makes truly last, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's real love.
Yeah. And like true love and the long-term relationship involves some maintenance sex.
Yeah.
You asked earlier about how to spice it up.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of the relationship, you're the adventure they're on. Mm-hmm. And they're the adventure you're on. Mm. You don't know each other. You're taking these huge risks. You're making yourself really vulnerable.
Yeah.
That gets the blood pumping, and it feels scary, but also arousing.
Yeah.
10 years in, 20 years in, Terry and I just celebrated our 25th anniversary. Mm. I'm not the adventure he's on, and he's not the adventure I'm on.
Yeah.
For us to feel that sort of the thrill of adventure, we have to make an effort consciously as a couple to go on an adventure together.
Yeah.
To seek adventure out. And what a lot of people don't understand is that adventure that they don't feel anymore and that they grieve for, that wasn't, they didn't fail. You know, they haven't, like, they're not letting each other down because that's not there anymore. That's just built into the beginning of a relationship.
Yeah.
And if you want to feel that again, you got to link arms and go on an adventure together.
Yeah.
And it's harder to go on an adventure right now together as a couple mm-hmm. because we're all confined to our homes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of the places that people will go on adventure, even if they're going to be monogamous, but they'll go to like some sexy environment where maybe other people are having sex. They'll go to a sex club, only be with each other, or a swingers party, but only be with each other if they're going to be monogamous.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll go to some like event like Folsom
mm-hmm.
where there's just so much like sexual and erotic energy, and they bask in it, and then they go home and fuck the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
And we're cut off from that right now.
Yeah.
From having, you know, linking arms and going on an adventure together.
Mm-hmm.
So I think being a little easier on each other and saying, you know, right now things aren't going to be that adventurous, doesn't mean it can't be hot, doesn't mean we can't be intimate. Maybe now we have the time for, you know, enacting some elaborate fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
and we should, you know, lean in and make an effort to do that.
Yeah.
But pressure is a terrible thing, especially if two people in a relationship or two or three or four people in a relationship, if they find themselves at different ends of the libido spectrum in reaction to the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, if one person is tanking and the other person's horny, there needs to be an accommodation. There needs to be some indulgence and some give and take and an allowance for that difference. Otherwise, it's going to become a, you know, focus of resentment for both partners and undermine the relationship.
Yeah. Wow. But I think that's beautiful. I think that's really sound. I mean, it's sound advice, and but it's really important. I think it's really important for anybody. I mean, it's really important to know. I mean, even like somebody that's like, even with yourself, you know, it's like just to know, like, we could do this for ourselves, just to, you know, just to be content with ourselves. Like, don't be afraid to just really be able to sort of being able to be in, like, in this alone. Like, we could sort of do that exploration inside too. Like, it's good to know, mm-hmm. like, this is fun. This is like, this can be a fun exploration unto yourself. Like, to figure
also
out what
planning.
We like. Yeah.
Planning is fun. Mm-hmm. One of the you know, as the marital advice industrial complex became a little less homophobic and open relationship phobic and a little less kink phobic, mm-hmm. they looked at the relationships of people who had open relationships and people who were kinky or who were swingers. And they found that a lot of these people had better sex lives, not with others, but also just with their own partners, mm-hmm. because they were making sexy plans.
Yeah.
Because in anticipation of going to the swingers club with the wife, the husband and wife were fucking because they were horny about this date that was coming up, this planned sex that was coming up. And the kinksters who are, you know, going to have a big, you know, kinky play date or go to a big kink event are horny in anticipation of that event. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to stop us right now about from making plans that we can feel horny about, even if we can't fully execute them.
Yeah.
And we don't know exactly when we'll be able to with a partner, like, you know, make a sexy plan for the future and just talk about it.
Yeah.
It's going to make you horny.
Yeah.
It's going to make you horny right now in advance of like ever being able to realize that plan.
I love it. It's great. Well, we have plans. We have plans for IML 2021.
And Terry and I have made plans. Yes.
Our big plans. Our big, big plans. It's so exciting.
It is. It is.
I love it. Where can people find all of your stuff and stuff online and beyond on the internets?
I've been writing Savage Love, my syndicated column, for almost 30 years.
Amazing.
I still write
it
every week.
Yes.
And you can find that and my podcast that I've been doing for 13 or 14 years now. Both of them can be found at savagelovecast.com. Yeah, I'm still doing it.
You're the best. Well, thank you so much.
An advice column is such a great gig.
Yes.
I'm like Ann Landers. They're going to have to pry it out of my cold dead hands one day.
I love it. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And tell Terry I said hi. And I miss you both. Thank you.
I will do. Do you remember when we first met? We were at a Pride event.
We were in Stockholm.
That's right. At Pride.
Yes.
And that's the first time I met you in person.
That's right.
I just love you.
I love you.
I wish you a happy Pride, however you're going to celebrate it. It's taking over my dreams, waking me out of my sleep. I think I'm coming apart.
The Margaret Show is an Erios production with editing by Tracy Levy and original music by Garrison Starr. Never miss an episode of The Margaret Show. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
Erios. Powered by Acast.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.